This is Poking Holes in Blinders. Here's a sneak peek into this week's episode.
Socrates' point is nobody chooses to do wrong.
Wait, who's that?
Socrates.
No, I never heard of him. I think what is so cool about living today is the accessibility of knowledge.
So I asked Google Bard about the Roman Republic and why it is that it turned into the Roman Empire.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome back to Poking Holes in Blinders. I'm Colin Fallenwetter, and with me, as always, for the last 9 episodes, and this one, number 10, Dr. Brian Height. 10 episodes, dude. That's where we're at.
That is where we're at. I know. It's a good beginning. Looking forward to all the rest.
Definitely. Before we started, you had mentioned on your enjoyment of AI. What are you talking about? I haven't done anything. I haven't done any of the hey, put a bunch of words in or ideas and get something back. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, yeah, it's funny. I mean, before you hit record, we were just, you know, doing what we do, which is just shooting the shit. And to kind of prepare for this podcast and some of the things that we've talked about discussing, I used Google Bard to just throw a few questions in to summarize the top 5 reasons why, whatever. And the thing just spits out the top 5 reasons. And there it is. Not a whole lot of information, but if you want it to expand on the information, you can just ask it. Hey, you know, will you expand on this? Give me some more. And it does. ChatGPT does the same thing. It's been an interesting little tool. I forget that it's there sometimes, but the times when I remember, it's just, I don't know, man. It's kind of a fascinating little thing. It's more of a toy at this point for me than anything else, but I can absolutely see the usefulness and the beneficial nature of this for many, many people in many, many industries. Have you not played around with the AI at all?
No, I mean, I heard people talking about chat. GTO, GPT.
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 Chat GPT, yeah.
But I honestly, I have no frame of reference. I have no idea what it is. I hear people liking it. They think it's a good thing, but I have, like, seriously no. I have no idea what you're talking about. Use an example. Like, what did you use it on?
So, for example, one of the things that this plague of Trump that is happening in our country, it's a fascinating thing to me that this clearly immoral person who keeps being indicted on any number of illegal activities and doesn't even hide it. Like, I mean, it's not even he's trying to get away with something. It's just that, yeah, I'm going to do it. And you guys just aren't going to do anything about it. I mean, that is a fascinating thing to me. And our move, it seems like, to a more authoritarian, or at least some people's willingness to accept an authoritarian figure like Trump, not even accept, but endorse and want an authoritarian figure like Trump to run this country is really interesting to me. And it takes me back to history. And so one of the things that I was looking at was the Roman Empire, and more specifically, the Roman Republic and how it turned into the Roman Empire. So just real quick, all I did was ask Google Bard, because I use both. ChatGPT seems to be a little bit better at writing. Like, it'll write in different voices and write stuff in a really easily understandable way. But Google Bard has access to the most recent information on Google. ChatGPT doesn't. Its information stops at 2021. So I asked Google Bard about the Roman Republic and why it is that it turned into the Roman Empire. And the 5 reasons that it gave, it says increasing instability and violence. So it got bigger. There was more violence. But a couple things really stuck out at me, because the next thing that it said was the rise of Julius Caesar. So you get this guy who is very charismatic and a great politician, and he rises up and he loves power. Julius Caesar does. So that's one of the reasons. Another reason that it says is the decline of the Roman Senate. And good Lord, man, any just cursory glance at our Congress will show that, dude, our legislative branch of our government is weak. It is dysfunctional. There are so many problems with that. And if the legislative branch can't be there, to do what it's supposed to do, which is to serve as a check and a balance for the other two, the judicial and the executive branches, then it's our government is imbalanced and it's not working the way that it's supposed to. And so that was another reason. So it was just very interesting. Just in literally seconds, can ask a question of this thing and it'll summarize some information. Now, some of the criticism about AI is that sometimes it'll give you wrong information. So you have to double check the sources sometimes. But man, just as a tool of just getting some quick information, a quick hit, especially summaries of things, it's been, it's been really interesting.
So you're saying when you ask it, it actually looks at all the sources and examines them and then offers possible things that haven't been written yet? Because everything in just like normal search engines just pulls up things that have been written. So it's saying it's compiling information and making decisions to answer your question. How did the Roman Empire rise to power? And so it analyzed that and then kind of put it together and then offered a proposal.
Yeah, it's the text that it gives you is unique. It creates its own text based on all of those sources. Yeah, exactly what you just said.
That's pretty awesome. That is pretty awesome. I think what is so cool about living today is the accessibility of knowledge. And I was listening to, I think I mentioned it before, but Bill Nye's masterclass. And one of the things he proposed in there was that everyone in the world should have access to the internet. And everyone gets that information. Then I just think that we can look into it and analyze it and solve any problem because everyone has the same information and people come to it from different sides. We had talked about, I think, in range, when you go outside your expertise to ask questions, crowdsourcing questions. And I think that is such a cool thing about living today. And additionally, now we have computers that are helping analyze it and offering its own, I guess, summary or expertise. I love jumping a little bit, and it's going to make sense. I love Star Trek. And what they've always done is whenever they're just having their human interactions, they always say, hey, computer, like the computer's always listening. And it's not that big of a deal in that world. And the computer has that access and has information. And that's sort of where we're going. That seems like when they proposed that in the 60s, that somehow Gene Roddenberry had a vision of the future that's where we're at. You say, hey, Siri, and you can ask a question and comes up with an answer. Like that computer is always listening. I wonder on the other side of that is what about like privacy? Do we feel like we have an invasion of privacy, or is it just that the tool and maybe in time the safeguards are around us enough that it just becomes like that? Like you're in your house. Hey, house, can you turn on the oven downstairs? I think we're almost already there. It's so exciting.
Yeah, the house thing, I think about that all the time. I have Alexa working in my house and it controls quite a few lights in various places. And I forget sometimes that I use it as much as I do. Like, for example, I was in a hotel the other day and I'm like, oh, yeah. I have to actually flip the switch. I don't know. It just becomes this ingrained normal thing. And I've thought about it with the microwave and I think hook it up to, there are all kinds of different smart home things that you can do, hooking up ovens and your air conditioner and just all kinds of stuff like that. For me, Alexa just controls the lights, but even just that it's an incredibly powerful thing that just like everything else, we get used to it though. See, I like I said, I don't even think about the fact that I just say, you know, Alexa, turn on the light. And it does until I can't do that. But yeah, that the technology is fascinating, but it would come with a loss of some sort of privacy. I mean, what would that look like?
It's kind of how we are now. One of the craziest things when we had kids is you have the baby monitors in the room and sometimes you have the video baby monitors. And people go around and hack into the baby monitors and talk to children through that. That is so crazy. That's so crazy to me. It is a great tool to put the parents' minds and hearts at ease because you can just see, oh, look, they're still there. Or, you know, across the house, another room, they start crying and then you can respond to that. So that's such a great benefit. But like every technology, the accessibility of people being able to hack into that, I don't understand the mindset of that. I don't understand it. With any advancement, I think there's rampant advancement that just gets out of control. It happened in the industrial age, you know, the meat packing plants, and what was it, Sinclair wrote The Jungle and just brought awareness and light to the horrible conditions inside meat packing. However, what the Industrial Revolution did is it was able to provide food to so many more people. So there's that balance. I'd love to get back to the Trump thing a little bit. But before we do that, I'm going to stay on this path. My mind's jumping around so much. It's like there's so much interconnectivity with what we're talking about that it's hard for me to stay focused, but I'm going to stay focused.
Don't make excuses for not being able to stay focused, homeboy. You can't ever stay focused. Just do you.
You're right. You're right. What was I talking about?
No clue. Last thing I heard was Upton Sinclair and The Jungle and how the Industrial Revolution changed everything.
Oh, right. Okay. Thank you for helping me get back on track. So with any advancement like that, I just finished the book, Weapons of Math Destruction.
Weapons of Math? Math Destruction? M-A-T-H?
Yes. Weapons of Math Destruction. And it's talking about how we as a society are going to such a big data analysis society, and that there's all these surveys and algorithms, just like your search engine. It's trying to customize to the person. But then the problem with that is then you're being led down a path by your previous choices that this algorithm thinks that it's doing you a good job or doing the right thing, but it starts narrowing your focus. And that's basically what the book was about. It's like, we have all this big data that we're putting into models, and we're making decisions off these models. There was one called the Performance Analysis Survey, something like that. It had to do with teachers, with teachers getting poor scores on surveys. And it was pointing out that there is definitely a benefit to having surveys or data. But the problem with this performance analysis is that so many teachers just started losing their jobs just because the educational system bought into this big data algorithm. I'm not doing a really great job explaining this, but what I'd like to go to is there was a teacher in it that 1 year, his performance score was a 6 out of 100. And then the next year, his performance score was 96. And he didn't really change his procedures, but to have the same system punch out a 96 1 year and a 6 the year before, in the book, they talked about the dangers of just relying on these systems that had feedback loops that aren't being updated. There was the book that did you read it? The What's Wrong with Society? Or What's Wrong with Us? A Self-Help Guide to Society.
Yeah. Tim Urban's book. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, my point of this presentation is that we've had this data revolution and this technology revolution, and it is so rampant right now, but there's people out there that see it and they're proposing, hey, this is great to a point, but the system is broken. And so I think that's the same thing that happened in the Industrial Revolution, that it was great and you start putting regulations on it. That goes back to privacy. So we have the access and the technology, and it is rampant, and people are bringing light to the problems of it. And so I actually have a brighter view of the future that, hey, it is broken. There are things that are broken. Like you said, the legislation's broken. The fact that Trump still has 30% of the nation's population behind him. What I appreciated about Mike Pence running for the presidential election is he said Trump gave him an option. You either choose Trump or you choose the Constitution. He chose the Constitution, and now he's opposing Trump and the Republican Party. And one of his statements was, you hear all this divide, but then when you just go meet people, it's not as bad as what we think it is. People are still treating people well. I think we've had such progression in just humanistic things, just the LGBTQ that push, you know, bringing light to Black Lives Matter, to the movement. I just think it's the bad press is so rampant that we feel like it's worse than it is. But we have progressed so much over the last couple of years. And as long as we get this technology, search algorithms, weapons of mass destruction, what's wrong with society type stuff, if we keep a light on it and we keep focusing and striving for a better society, I feel like we are in a great direction. We're not there, but we will keep striving and continue. Thank you.
Great presentation. Some slides next time would be better. I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on it, but the 30 to 40% of people supporting Donald Trump, it does fascinate me. And I read an article not too long ago that asked people, did any of the indictments that, you know, happened against Trump, any of his legal problems change your mind about him at all? And they're like, nope. And the fact that the Christian population still seems to be behind this guy who is, again, just unabashedly just immoral and subscribes to none of the Christian values. It's really interesting. But to get back to the information stuff, yeah, you're comparing AI to the Industrial Revolution. I think that's a good comparison, because exactly what you're talking about is where the conversation is happening in AI. And that is, yes, this is an amazing tool. You can use it for many, many purposes. I can't even get on one of the article sites that I read stuff on without seeing something about, here are the top four ways to use ChatGPT, or the top prompts that you can use to get the information. It's everywhere. And it's great.
Is it putting itself up there? It's self-promoting. Hey, this is ChatGPT. Check out what I can offer you.
I wouldn't doubt it, because what you're saying is right too, with the algorithms that are out there. I mean, I click on these things and I read them. So the things like, oh, this guy likes the ChatGPT articles, so it's creating more. I really don't know. But what you're saying is right. And it does funnel us in. And that's been a discussion about social media. That's been one of the problems that's been brought up around social media, are these algorithms that pigeonhole us, that do isolate and create these silos of individuals that are just like-minded. We're not hearing other alternative perspectives. We are being fed through the social media algorithms exactly what the algorithms think we want to hear. And as human beings, we like to hear what we want to hear. And because sometimes hearing things that we don't like is uncomfortable, but it's important to consider all of those. And with regard to AI, yeah, you talk about the importance of information and knowledge. This is where you began, was just, you love knowledge. You love the fact that we have access to all this information. Well, one of the biggest problems with AI that even the creators of AI, they're lobbying Congress to be regulated, because they see the danger that can exist with people making up stuff with AI, that people can put out a lot of false information using AI. And it's already had the capabilities already there to create somebody's image, to recreate their voice and make them say what, if I wanted to use AI to create your voice to say whatever I wanted it to say, I mean, given the right technology, which I don't currently own, but somebody does, it could happen. They can even take your image, your likeness. This is one of the biggest things that SAG is actually bringing up in the negotiations, is this idea of AI and taking people's likeness and using AI to generate images. Same thing with the writers. The writers are worried about people using AI to generate scripts that are in the style that they write. So I can't name any writers off the top of my head, but if that particular writer wrote this movie, a couple movies, and that has a style to it, then there's a way that AI could emulate that style and create a script. And the writer's like, well, I don't want that. If the script is mine, I want it to be mine. Now, I have different thoughts about all of that. But to get back to what we were talking about in terms of knowledge, one of the problems with AI is that we can't necessarily trust knowledge. And in an era where there is so much polarity and there is so much questioning of expertise and whether even expertise exists, whether we should trust any experts. I mean, a lot of scientists throughout COVID-19, they screwed up. They made a lot of mistakes. And like you've pointed out before, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's progress. Every time we conduct science, we realize, oh, you know what? We thought this, but we realized we were wrong. So now we think that. That's progress. That's like Adam Grant says, that's the title of his book, Thinking Again. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does, in a lot of people's minds, sow distrust. of the knowledge of information. And that's where AI is going to be tricky, because you're right, there are big benefits that could be possible and exist now, but there are some really bad downsides that could also and will, I believe, exist until we figure this thing out and strike some sort of balance, like you were talking about with the Industrial Revolution.
The balance is key. You had mentioned about the book, the Experience Machine. Have you gotten into that at all?
I believe I've read the first chapter or two in that. But it's a really interesting concept in general and really interesting book overall, it looks like.
It's fascinating. And just to give a little bit of background, the author, Andy Clark, he talks about that humans, the way we experience the world is mostly through predictions, as opposed to just taking everything in and then making decisions on what we just take in. It's basically saying that we are prediction machines. And it really makes a lot of sense to me. He uses an example about turning your head or lifting up a cup of coffee, bringing to your mouth. If I'm in the present and I go to pick up my coffee and I'm bringing it to my mouth, I have to be very mindful of how I can get it to my mouth without spilling it in the present. However, if I predict, I know my hand's about here. That's where it needs to be in the future for me to take a drink of coffee. Then that's basically how our minds work. It predicts the future. Now, the cool part about our minds is that when there are errors, prediction errors that say, I thought my mouth is over here. I'm like, oh, it's not. It's always updating itself. It's always taking the prediction errors and then putting that back into the model of our experience so that we can make better predictions in the future. I think that's the key to what the author was proposing in Weapons of Mass Destruction, that we have all this big data, we're basing our decisions on the output of this data, but it's not self-correcting itself. You put it in there and then you're using the same model when things have changed. So there's always that feedback loop. My point is that with all of this technology and all of this information, and like you were saying with the AI regulations, if we constantly look at our models and we constantly update those models, then we can have better models that really represent what's going on, just like Andy Clark was saying in The Prediction Machine. We have a prediction of how to drink some coffee. And when there's prediction errors within that, we are able to adjust and just concentrate on those prediction errors. And that's how we can stay in the present. I think it's a fascinating book. It's so crazy to me that I see the connections between the Experience Machine and predictions, the Weapons of Mass Destruction, and the book, What is Wrong with Us? The Self-Help Guide to Societies. They're all in different categories, but it's all basically saying the same thing. It's all connected. It's crazy, man. I can jump into another topic, and it was about the universe and how I feel like the universe is basically like a search engine for us individuals, but I don't want to jump into that quite yet. But yeah, I just think it's all connected, man. It's all connected.
Okay. Yeah. Well, certainly there are a lot of things that are connected like that. And I think that the more we read, the more we learn, the more discussions we have with other people, particularly ones that have information we don't, that think things that we don't, the broader our perspectives get. I am looking forward to getting more into this book. But if I understand Andy Clark's point, he presents it like this at the very beginning, is that the model that has been accepted for a long time of how we perceive and how we understand our environment is sensory input comes in. So electrons, they come in, our eyes pick them up, the optic nerve is stimulated. That triggers certain neurochemicals that go to, you know, the visual centers of our brain, and our brain figures out from all these data what it is that we're seeing. So if I see a cup of coffee, it's because I happened to glance in that direction and sensory input came in. My brain interpreted all of that information and boom, there's a coffee cup. But Andy Clark's position is that yes and no, it's more our brains are already predicting that there is likely to be a coffee cup there in a situation, and the sensory data just confirms that. So the sensory data that come in Our brains are finite. They are limited. They are amazing machines, but they can't process everything that comes into them. So in order to be more efficient, which is something our brains are very, very good at being, we just only use the sensory input that we need. And that's where you get into the prediction error that you're talking about. So if I predict that there's going to be a coffee cup there and I look over and there's, you know, there is a coffee cup, there's sensory input there that confirms that. But if for some reason I predict that there's a coffee cup and it turns out that there's really a water bottle, well, that sensory input that comes in would be different. And so my brain would update its prediction. It would say, okay, well, there's a conflict between what I predict and what the sensory input is showing me. So I need to adjust. I need to adjust my model of what this is and actually analyze things. So that idea of prediction is really, it is a fascinating one. I'm going to get into the book more. Maybe we can talk about it more on a different podcast after I'm smarter about it. But but that guy, he seems to be onto something really interesting with that theory. But I'm interested in hearing about your universe idea. So how talk to me about that.
Okay. I'll just talk about my experience. And I think there's a serendipitous way that things happen in our lives that just seem like they fit in. I'll start with an example. There's a book called The Rise of Superman, and it's about how extreme athletes are able to get beyond what seems possible for human beings. And one of the stories in this book, Rise of Superman, is there was a rock climber, a free solo rock climber that was in a gully or he was stuck somewhere. I don't remember the details, but what I do remember about it is he had this rock wall that he needed to climb. He didn't scout it, but he started climbing it and he got into what they proposed as the flow state, how things just come easy and you can't see what's above you, but he just starts climbing and he just starts flowing, starts feeling and work his way up through this flow state to get to the top of this rock wall. And I think it ended up saving his life. How can you be at the bottom and not know anything about it and then just go forward and the solutions presents himself along the way? I feel like that's how the universe works. And I think conceptually how I see it is the universe is like a big search engine. I can use an example today. I was out doing some shopping and I'm like, I have to get a haircut. And the place I was going to go was crowded. So I just did some other shopping and I was walking back to my car and I looked down the road and I'm like, oh, there's some shops down there. I bet you there's a barber down there. And I go down there and there was two barbers down there. Now, I'd never been there before. I had no idea. I predicted that there was a barber down there just because being in England, there's so many barbers here. Like over in Windsor, there's like 10 salons over there. It's way more than we have in America. So I just assumed that it would be there. But I looked down there. I'm like, I think there's one down there. And I followed the path and there was. And I was able to get a haircut. Now, that's a kind of a smaller example. But I feel like that happens to us all the time. All the time. It has to do with if you consider it the flow state or the statement that things are going to work out. You know, how do you know they're going to work out? And if you just relax and yes, we have things that we want to accomplish and you head yourself in that direction, you will find the answers. Just like when you type into a search engine, anything you want to know, if you just type it in, then it pulls up for you. I feel like that's what the universe presents us. And we hit on that concept with the Anthony Molinari interview. He mentioned when he's in that good place, that's like, now you have abundance, I think was how he said it. And I feel like that's how our experience is when we're open to it and we're ready to go. It's kind of a esoteric idea. I kind of call it the uniweb. It's kind of a dumb name. You need to find a better name, but the universe works. It works. And we're part of that. And when we're open to those clues, we will find that flow state and we'll be able to climb the rock walls in front of us.
Yeah, that's interesting. I agree with some of that and some of it. I'm not sure I'm on the team with that.
That's okay.
The barber thing is interesting. And I think it's a strong example of the power of belief. because you have a belief that things are going to work out. If that's your belief, it's all going to happen the way that you want to. You know, you have this belief that there's going to be a barber where you want a barber to be, and turns out there is one, then that's great. That's very salient for you, and it will stick in your mind a lot because it supports your belief that things are going to work out. And this is where the confirmation bias comes in, is that evidence that supports our beliefs, it does stick to us, and we do remember it very easily. But how many times have you like, oh, I wonder if a place is down here? Oh, nope, it's not. You know, how many times has that happened? How many times has that belief not been confirmed? We tend to forget that stuff. We tend to forget that evidence. And, you know, you mentioned abundance. What that even is questionable. In other words, what might be abundance for me is not abundance for you. And so it really comes down to, what are we really looking for? The sense, and I've heard this in other areas, they extrapolate kind of what you're talking about into large. So if you just want money, then you just think about money and all of a sudden money comes. Or if you want success, then you just think about it and all of a sudden it shows up. And I think that there is a grain of truth to that through this path. If my focus is on earning more money or gaining success or developing a better relationship with my family, whatever it is that I want to accomplish, if that's where my focus is, then I am going to be more open to and recognize more quickly evidence and information that is relevant to that particular thing that I think is important, that priority that I've set. I'm going to notice that stuff more easily. This sort of gets back to the book we were talking about with the predictions. So if my prediction is that this is what's going to happen, and then the sensory information and what I experience matches that, I'm going to remember that. That's going to filter into my predictions for the future. It's going to affect my actions. It's going to affect my choices and my decisions and how I perceive different things around me. You and I might experience the exact same thing, but because of a belief that I hold, I experience it differently than you do, meaning that it means something different to me. It's either important, it's not important, it's pleasant, it's unpleasant. You and I might do the exact same stuff and just experience it very differently because of our beliefs. I'm definitely with you in the sense that we are just part of this universe. I think the Buddhists got it right with that. I really think that what they call emptiness is a really important concept. That concepts and separations and constructs, all these different things that we use to distinguish one thing from another, are illusions in a way. There are just a bunch of atoms floating around, and some of them are, you know, more closely packed than others. And so we perceive those things as trees or bookshelves or computers or people. And our brains are very good at compartmentalizing and categorizing. And so we see the world as separate things. But in reality, we are all just part of this larger thing that is the universe. Absolutely. I'm on board with that. But moving forward with our lives, I think that what we focus on and whether we get it, how we think about what happens to us, it really does come down in a huge part to what we believe, because what we believe is going to color and influence what we even notice, what we even take in. Like I said before, we can't take in everything. We can't process everything. So our brains prioritize to make it more efficient. And that information that matches our beliefs, that information makes it in very quickly. The brain just decides, yep, if he believes this, then this is what it is. So let's take that information in and lock in on that, because that's clearly important. So it can seem like, yeah, I was thinking about a barber and all of a sudden one manifested itself right there. That's how the universe works. It just gives that. Whereas other situations, and I'm sure that they've existed, they'll be very hard for you to bring to mind. But other situations that were kind of similar, like, you know what, I'm looking for a cigar shop, or I'm looking for a place where I can buy a donut, and none showed up. And you're like, oh, screw it. All right, I'm just going back to the hotel. And, you know, those times probably happen too. They just don't come as easily to mind.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point about the confirmation bias. It's true. It totally is true. I would talk about my experience in saying I felt resistance. When I was driving to the first place that I was going to go, and I look in there and I felt the resistance. And then I go and find a place to park and walk into this mall. And I was just looking around for another barber in the mall. And I just felt like it wasn't happening. It wasn't going to happen. So then I got the other stuff and I was walking back to my car, And it was at that moment when I looked down the road, I didn't feel resistance. I felt a path. And of course, I was hopeful. And if I got down there and there wasn't a barber, it's like, okay, well, I haven't lost anything. It's not just about whether I found it or not. It was the feeling that I got when I was trying to find it and it wasn't happening. And then when I looked down the road, it felt like a flow of water. It felt like I was being pushed along. That's kind of what I'm saying about that. But I totally agree that times when it didn't happen and you're looking for something that doesn't work out and you're just like, all right, whatever.
Well, you know what? See, this gets into the discussion. I've brought it up before, Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, where he has systems one and system two. And system one is this intuitive, very quick mindset where things just kind of come into our mind. This is where how he describes intuition. And the way he describes it is that sensory input, the information just comes in. We don't recognize all of the information. It's coming in unconsciously, but our brains are processing it and creating expectations and predictions based on that information that we're not even aware is coming in. So what you're describing, I think, and I hate putting words in people's mouths, especially people smarter than I am, like Daniel Kahneman, but I would think that Kahneman would say, okay, Colin, so here's what happened, is you glanced down this road and you saw some cues that in the past had led you to believe, or, you know, cues that maybe in the past had been associated with finding what you were looking for. Now, you didn't recognize those cues explicitly. They didn't come into your mind consciously where you were thinking about it. But whatever it was, you recognized something with system one. Your system one quickly processed what you looked at when you looked down the street and like, oh, that looks like a place where I could go. And that feeling would come. That intuition would be there. Does that make sense? Is that, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I think we as humans have such an inquisitive mind and we want to find answers. I would say like he can propose that to me. And I think that's a very valid statement. However, it wasn't my experience. My experience was in my mind said there's a barbershop down there that I'm going to go get a haircut. That's what it was. I almost felt like, as Anthony said in our interview, it's like, I'm not even hoping. It's like, I know it's going to work out. That's the feeling that I had when I did it. I would like to take that example and I'd like to broaden it to a bigger, more serendipitous example as opposed to just action result. My friend, who was a skier, he was part of the U.S. ski team, and his father used to train skiers, and a lot of the kids that his father trained ended up on the U.S. ski team. My friend's father fell ill, and it was during the Winter Olympics, and my friend had to go back, and his father passed away, and he was just dealing with that and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he was heading back home. And he kind of didn't want to leave yet. And then finally he's like, all right, I'm going to head back home. And he was East Coast. He had to fly back to West Coast, got on a plane, and he was looking at the seats, like seat assignment. And there was a short flight from New England to New York. On this short flight, the price of paying for his luggage was less than the upgrade to first class. He's like, well, why don't I just upgrade? Then you get your free luggage and it's $10 less. So then he upgraded, picked his seat, and then he walked into the airplane and he sat down to a skier who won a medal in that year's Winter Olympics. My friend sat down and he's like, hey, I used to be on U.S. ski team. And the guy said, yeah, he said, my name is, I know you are. And they started chatting. The serendipitous parts of that, of both of them not supposed to be on the plane. That skier was actually supposed to be in Europe 2 days earlier, but he pushed his flight. And so the fact that my friend was able to sit down to a medal winning skier at that moment in time is such a serendipitous event. And additionally, one of the last texts that he got from his dad was, hey, I'm watching this skier in the Olympics. He's skiing really well. My friend was able to share this text, one of his father's last texts with this skier at that moment. The coincidence in that is ridiculous. However, I feel like as humans, that happens to us all the time. yeah, we have the action or the desire, confirmation bias, and outcome of like what happened with my haircut today. But then beyond that, the universe somehow works in that it can provide for all of us in these ways that keep us connected. We're still individuals. We still make choices. My friend could have chose a different thing, and then he never would have had that experience. But those experiences happen all the time. And not just to ski racers. It happens to everyone. And that's what I'm talking about. The Uni-Wide Web, or I really want to get a better name. Maybe I'll use Google GTD.
Oh, good Lord. Chat GPT. But yes, that's a great use for Chat GPT. I've done that for different articles and different presentations and stuff. Like, hey, because I'm horrible at naming, at providing titles for that stuff. So I'm like, what would you call this? What's a good title for this? And I just put in some text of what it is, or I'll put in a little, here's what it's about. And it'll spit out a title. I'm like, yeah, that's a good one. That's a great use for Chat GPT. Put it in there and we'll see what it comes out with. I don't disagree that there are certainly coincidences that are head scratchers that happen in life all the time. And I am a huge proponent of keeping our intentions top of mind as much as possible and being open to. I have right here, man. It's a sticky note right here. It says, stay ready. Because you never know when opportunity is going to come up. You never know when it's going to present itself. So if you stay ready, then when that opportunity does come, you can jump on it and you can get into it.
I agree. Just staying ready. But I'm not saying that we're just getting pushed along by fate. I feel like we're active participants in this. We're making choices that help us go down these certain roads and to have these experiences. Us as humans have such a great capacity for compassion and for inclusiveness. And we also have the opposite of that, have this capability of being tyrants and violence. I just hope that when you see, this goes back to our first podcast, when we're talking about systems within systems or parts, smaller parts are part of a bigger part, community, society, globe, universe. If we're able to make that collective consciousness switch, there's enough resources in the universe that we can all be provided for. It's not always going to be easy. You still have to fight for things. You still have to make decisions and choices. But if we stopped fucking around with each other, if we just stop that, imagine the energy that we would save and how far we could go as society. All of the scams, like how many emails do you get a day on scams? How many? Especially now that it's programmed. And so people don't even have to do it. They program it. They hit it. The computer's sending out millions and millions and millions. Obviously, it works because they continue to do it. So they're going to make enough money from these scams. If we stopped all of that shit, take all that energy and did it more in the benefit of ourselves in society, not just the benefit of ourselves, fuck society, then we have such capacity to go so far, so far. I also understand what you're saying. It's like our desires are going to be different. We have different needs, different desires, but there's the five basic needs for human survival, right? There's oxygen, water, food, shelter, and sleep. There's enough resources available with our ability to figure out how to get more resources that we can provide all of those basic needs. Then beyond that, if we stopped all of that human on human bullshit, we can put so much energy into perpetuating the species, and then we all get to have a better experience and we all get to have a better life path. I'm not saying it's all roses. There's always conflict. There's always going to be conflict. But if we approached each other in a different way, then we can be better. We can be better than we are. I completely believe that.
I absolutely believe that too. I think that what you're getting at is what are the values that we care about as individuals, as societies? Because I think that particularly in the United States, there is often a very strong push toward individualism. What is good for me? With much less consideration for what's good for anybody else. That's what often happens. And I was reading an article here recently. It had to do with who was buying guns. It was a New York Times article. And one of the things that they mentioned is that some of the research that has come out now about what types of people are buying guns are people who are, they have more fear. They subscribe to the belief that the world is a dangerous place, that people are dangerous and are out to get you or out for themselves, or, you know, beliefs like that. If that's your belief, if that's your worldview, if that's how you're understanding your environment, if you're walking through the world expecting to be attacked at any given moment by whatever, well, you know, of course you're going to take steps to alleviate that threat because you perceive a threat. Now, other people walking through the world thinking other people are terrific. The world is a wonderful place. And it brings me back to what you were talking about earlier, too. Where you had this optimistic view of, you know, I think society is getting better. And I think that I've read a lot of stuff that they've made that case too. In race relations in this country, you'd hear any number of Black people who are talking. I think Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's not even in race, but I think he even brought it up in something that I was listening to him, because that's a smart dude in so many different ways. But anyway, if you were going to be a Black person at any time in history, you want it to be now. Because it's just a better time. Now, is it perfect? No. Are there still problems? Yes. But are things improving if you just look at a timeline? Yeah. It's hard not to make the case that things are improving. And hopefully they will continue to improve. There's an author named Steven Pinker who has put out several books that agree with you. So the books that tend to sell, and it's the same reason that the algorithms work the way they do. The books that often tend to sell are, look, the society's going to hell in a handbasket. Everything's wrong. And here's how we're going to fix it. And talking about all the things that are bad, all the things that are wrong, you know, and really sensationalizing any problems that might exist. Whereas Steven Pinker's like, look, man, it's not really that bad. So let's talk about all the things that are good. Let's talk about the things that are going well. Let's talk about, yes, if you take isolated incidents and all of this, the picture can be portrayed in such a way as to think, yeah, this is bad. But when you really look at the data and the trends, we're getting better.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to draw awareness to problems. When you draw awareness and put into the spotlight of what's going on, then you start a discussion and then we can move in a better way, which I feel like that's where we're at. We're at big data right now is running society. And so now we need to figure out how to have it work for us instead of against us. Because right now it's working against us.
It's doing both. I mean, it's providing a lot of information that's very useful for a lot of organizations, for a lot of people. It is incredibly helpful in many, many ways. And there are downsides, just like everything else. And I completely agree with you. We don't need to look at the world through the unicorn and rainbow lenses. But at the same time, we don't need to fixate on the catastrophic, you know, cataclysm that seems to be happening. There's an in-between there, too. So are there problems? Yes. Should we acknowledge them? Absolutely. Because if we don't, we can't move forward. However, we don't need to blow those problems out of proportion. We don't need to make them seem bigger than they actually are just to grab people's attention. And I think that's what happens a lot. I can't remember this author's name or what the name of the book is. I have it right over here. Hang on. The book is called Stolen Focus, Why You Can't Pay Attention and How to Think Deeply Again. It's by Johan Hari. And it's an amazing book. And really, the reason it came to mind is because we live in an age where attention is the commodity. It is as important, if not more important than money. People are trying to get your attention. Attention is what they want. The big data that you're talking about, a lot of that is geared toward how do I get people to pay attention to what I want them to pay attention to. Attention really is what's important. And what we've found is that for humans, one of the best ways to get their attention is to make things, number one, seem very, very big, very important, but in a bad way. Like this is something that's really bad and it could happen to you. So personalizing it as well. So we're going to personalize these things. It's bad and it could happen to you at any time. That gets people's attention. But too much of that is counterproductive. So balancing the idea of, are there problems? Sure, let's examine them in an objective, rational way, versus the problems are huge. You know, we don't want that either.
Yeah, I would agree. So the last book that I listened to, last couple books, was What's Wrong With Us? And then I listened to Weapons of Math Destruction. And then I'm like, I need some positivity in my life, because this is all bringing awareness to like the issues that are happening. Even though they had positive spins, they both books were hopeful for the future. But then when Anthony was talking about The Untethered Soul, then I got that one and got through that one. And it's just talking about a journey beyond yourself and about trying to find pure happiness and all that kind of stuff. And so I think what we're saying goes back to our tagline, you know, knowledge infused with compassion. Like, you have all this knowledge about what's going on, what's going wrong. Then you put some compassion in that, and then we can make better decisions. I have hope that that's not hope. That I have a belief. I have a belief that that's where we're headed, that things will continue to get better, that we can do things differently because we want to. We don't have to. We want to do them differently. You know, let's choose to do better. And not just for ourselves, but for all of us. We're in this together.
Yeah. I think I've said it before, where, you know, Socrates' point is nobody chooses to do wrong.
Wait, who's that?
Socrates.
No, I never heard of him. Wait, isn't it Socrates? Was it Socrates from Bill and Ted's?
Socrates. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Socrates. I think he wore some kind of robe, had obviously some beard. Anyway. So Socrates made the point. I think it's a great one. Nobody tries to do wrong. They think that what they're doing is the right thing. Now, the right thing for what and for whom, that's where things can go off the rails, because people can think, you know, I'm going to do the right thing for me, screw everybody else. Or I'm going to do the right thing for everybody else, and I'm going to completely ignore myself in this moment, which I don't think is necessarily the right thing either. But people, whatever the context, based on their beliefs, based on their priorities, they are trying to do right. Now, we may disagree that what they're doing is right, but they're coming from a place of, I think what I'm doing is the right thing to do in this moment. So really understanding the priorities and aligning those priorities with ones that meet the results within our society that we want, the connectedness, the forward-looking progress, the respect, the compassion that you mentioned.
Kindness.
Yeah. Just working together, because there, like you said before, there are enough resources for everybody. There are enough resources out there for everybody. It is not a zero-sum competition. It's very likely, if you read evolutionary biologists, psychologists, and different people who focus on evolution, human beings evolved to be competitive, to compete against each other for limited resources. We have many, many resources now, and that competition, I don't think it's as necessary for survival as it used to be. So I think that we need to understand and recognize that our innate tendencies might be to compete, to compare ourselves to others, to think of life as a zero-sum thing. When I win, you lose. When you win, I lose. Not looking at it like that, but looking at it from the standpoint of, we can all win. Let's try to figure that out. So instead of me figuring out how to beat you, this is the thing with our government that drives me insane. I've meant to like pick a day and just list each of the different things that I hear or read that have to do with war or beating or something that's adversarial in the conversation that happens within our government. Our side needs to beat their side. And it's just wrong. Let's shift that perspective from an adversarial, competitive, combative mindset to a more cooperative mindset. The government, particularly Congress, has just gone off the rails. I think that's a big part of it, is just our political system, the polarity. And that book that you're talking about by Tim Urban really addresses that in a great way. But, you know, we're running out of time now, though.
Yes, we are.
We ain't got time to go into Tim Urban's book as much as we might like to. And I didn't even get to the big question I was going to ask, because I want to know if Colin Fallenwider could completely reboot the system of the world, of the universe, of society, like what would stay and what would go. I want to know.
You mentioned that to me earlier, and I want to, of course, get your thoughts on it too. If we could remake the world or society, how would you do it? Holy shit. Like, that's, there's so much to think about. It's so much consideration. I don't know where to start. Actually, I do know where to start. It's really simple. If we just go after Starfleet ideals and look at the world in Star Trek and try to gain that society, then I think we'll be doing fine. It's a very simple answer, actually.
Well, I hear two parts to that. Is number one, emulate Starfleet and Star Trek society as much as humanly possible, and make Star Trek required viewing with tests for every person on the planet so that they're very clear on what it is that they should be doing.
But then it's the second part that it's like, then you're mandating people. I watched How to Be a Tyrant. It's a Netflix series, 6-part series. And one of them was General Gaddafi. Or Colonel Gaddafi, sorry. And he actually wrote a book called The Green Book. And it was mandated in school that everyone has to read this Green Book. It's like, so I don't know if we should force an ideology on people. I think you present it, because there's not going to be one ideology that works for everyone. There's not one type of pizza that works for everyone.
Isn't that what I would get, though, if I was watching Star Trek? Wouldn't I come to that conclusion?
I guess so. I don't know. It's complicated.
Now, I'm with you. I'm definitely not one for mandating anything. And if the more we can create an environment that just fosters what it is that we want and reinforces the things that we want to keep. There's another book. I forget the author's name, called Nudge. It's a pretty popular book. There are two authors in there, but they came out with the newer updated version. But it's really kind of about that. It's little things that can happen. One of the funniest examples that I remember coming out of that book was there was an organization that was spending a bunch of money cleaning up their bathroom, specifically the men's bathroom. People were just missing and creating a big mess. And what they did is they painted a little thing, I don't know, some kind of bug or something, like a bee, I think, in the urinal. And it reduced the mess and the costs for cleaning it up by like 80%. Just gave guys something to aim at.
That's all you need.
Little things like that, where you create environmental circumstances that make the behaviors that you want more likely to occur, just outside of people's awareness. Is it manipulation? Yeah, you know, it's some gray area there about how that works. But I'm with you in terms of, no, you must read this and you must follow these rules and these laws. And that can be counterproductive. But
it's a little bee. It's like a little honeybee at the bottom of the urinal. I've seen it. And it does help. It does work.
All right, well, it's helped you. So it's reduced Colin Fullenweider's mess that he makes in the urinal by 80%. That's terrific.
Now I don't even need the bee. I can aim when there's nothing there.
Progress, man. That's it right there. Evidence for progress. You've just presented it. We are getting better as a society. Yeah, we've run off. We got to be done now.
I'd like to share just a quick story when you brought up Neil deGrasse Tyson, and then we'll call it a day.
Yeah, what do you got?
I'm such a big fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson that I bought tickets to see him. And Brandon came with me, bought two tickets. Brandon and I went to see Neil deGrasse Tyson on a Thursday night about cosmic collisions. And at the beginning of his lecture, he's like, I just want to be clear of what you chose to do. You guys got dressed up on a Thursday night to come see an astrophysicist talk about cosmic collisions. That's what's going on here. It's like, we're all dorks. But I got to tell you, it was awesome. One of my favorite things that I've done in the last couple of years. I love that dude. It's great. All right, man. We'll pick up our conversation again on the next one.
Sounds good, man. I love it. Always enjoy talking to you. Have fun out there in England. And we'll see you when we see you.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for listening to our 10th episode of Poking Holes in Blinders, where knowledge infused with compassion fuels better decisions. Later!